Greetings and welcome to the Wednesday Rewind at Believers City Church in Menominee, Wisconsin. I'm Pastor Tim. I'm the lead pastor here, and I'm glad you joined us today. Each week at this time, we gather to discuss last Sunday's text and message and discuss how it can impact us personally. If you're local, you are no doubt tuned to 101.7 FM Street Level Radio, or you're watching on television. And if you are abroad, you are no doubt tuned into our web broadcast at believerstogether.com. No matter what brought you here, we're glad you are here. This week, we covered Hebrews chapter 10 in a message entitled, What's Next? So, let's get into it. Salvation is a free gift, so we think it was free. No, it wasn't free to God. It cost God his only son. Dad literally stepped aside to allow his son to be beaten and terribly murdered for us. A horrific death. Started in the garden when we decided that we wanted to be God. And ever since then, that's been the plague of mankind. Our desire to be man, to be God. Our desire to be in control. I hope it doesn't take you your whole life to come to the full realization that you're not and you never will be. His son, in perfect reflection of his father, then spent his life giving to us. God giving to us, saying he came to be a servant. After all, you need to understand that this is where we get the term disciple. If we reject discipline from our minds, it's the root word of discipline, disciple. You can't be a disciple without any discipline. Now, it appears that the author of Hebrews does have a message in that respect today, but he's seeking rather to say that any attempt to earn status, to earn a place with God. I'm going to work hard. I'm going to do this. Forgive me. I'm going to light enough candles. Whatever it might be, but I'm going to get my way to God. And that's the idea behind that, is that via any of our works and sacrifices, the writer of Hebrews is saying it's more than worthless. It is actually an offense to God. So we cannot in any way park all the activities and the service and the sacrifices and the discipline of God. We cannot park it over here and say, oh, that's all done now. Jesus died on the cross. I don't have to do any of that anymore. God says, I have you. You're mine. It's done. The miracle of rebirth and the human body, all of these things, that we look at all of that and we think that the power that did that doesn't really do anything. Really? Listen, that's like saying, you know, a nuclear bomb. You'd probably leave a splinter. His plan was to go from this point of positional sanctification to actually remaking our lives.
On Sunday, when we were together, we began the message with a rather critical issue in this discussion, and that was this fact, the fact that we have, and it's important to understand past tense have, already been given access to our God. The door is open. Admission now has been freely granted by the cross of Christ. And that point, you see, is essential in our understanding of this message we're discussing this week. No longer does mankind need to offer sacrifices and earn their way to God. Every Religion on earth actually adheres to that kind of practice, except for Christianity. Christianity, which essentially places is placed outside of religion as a whole, as it defies that major aspect of man's attempt to reach God. Because you see, Christianity is God coming to us, not us going to Him. And as unbelievers, such folks really know nothing of that kind of relationship. And as long as long-time practicing believers, well, I think we can at times be just as distant in this matter, because we can over time begin to make small of that access to God. I mean, we can start to make light of what is a profound gift. After all, it is indeed a free gift, and in our minds, what happens is free, it can come to mean something of little value. Indeed, it is free to you and me, but it's important to know that it certainly wasn't free to God. As we mentioned on Sunday, He stood back, He let His only Son be beaten and murdered so that we might have access to Him, so it really cost Him a great deal. Now, our text today seems to emphatically drive home, if you will, the idea that any attempt to earn our standing with God via our own works is not only useless, but is actually an offense to Him. It's an offense because it implies that what happened on that cross was not enough to clear our record. That we have to, on some level, add to the cross in order to meet the bar. Wrapping our minds around all of that can be a rather difficult thing to do, but then the author of Hebrews swings back literally in the other direction to clarify what it doesn't mean. So you got to really stay on your toes here, because what it does not mean, gang, that the free gift of grace, this ready access to the Father, what it does not mean is that nothing is expected of us. It does not mean that we desire in any way, that he doesn't desire in any way, rather, a response or reply. Now the problem, and that's what chapter 10 is handling here, the problem lies in both extremes. On the one side, the guy who says Jesus did it all, so thus he would, could, and will do nothing in response. And then there's the guy who says that Jesus, what he did on the cross was great and all, but he has to store up his own sacrifices and his own rituals and works and service to ultimately, you know, make it over the top and eventually see God. The latter, of course, fails right out of the gate because, again, this scripture tells us that we already have access to God. The battle is already won. And that was written before we believed. That was written before we were even born. So obviously, that access has nothing to do with us or our works. But we cannot find ourselves a lazy boy somewhere and just kick back. That's not what it means either. Jesus himself said that he came to do your will, O God, quote unquote. Jesus came to do the Father's will, and we are called to be like him, so we too should be seeking to do your will, O God. Such is not and cannot be a matter of duty. It can't be a matter of constraint. Such response, as we have read, is an offense to God and clearly says that we don't get it. We don't get it when it comes to the issue of the cross. It also says that we're not operating out of love, but rather operating out of guilt and probably a lot of pride. This issue that we're covering today, frankly, ails a lot of folks. Many people engage the faith and the faith community for all the wrong motivations, and frankly, I don't know if they know it or not, but it shows. When we're attempting to do enough, we inevitably get to a place where we frankly have done enough. We have imagined a particular status bar And for a while, we live to reach that bar, not for love, but for survival. And then once we think we have reached that bar, we have no desire to go any further because we never had any desire to go that far anyway. For our Redeemer, it seems he can never love us enough, never pour out his graces and blessings enough. Those in that latter camp, well, they know nothing of such relationship. We are mostly just trying not to end up in hell for eternity. So those who draw a line in the sand with their response to Christ are actually, their lives scream loudly as to the absence of that true love for him, and anyone even remotely close to them can see it. Now, these folks always seem to have a what now or what's next look on their face. I mean, they innately know there's something that's not really right, for they still have that inexplicable lack. There's still a hole in their lives. Something is still missing. Something is still lacking. They still have that inexplicable itch, so they're kind of always looking around for where's that missing piece. Now, the problem seems to stem from our confusion between positional sanctification and the practical. When we muddy the two, or attempt to wed the two even, we just really get a mess. Positional sanctification is experienced due to the soul work of Jesus Christ. Positional sanctification is experienced due to the soul work of Jesus Christ, and actually completed a very long time ago. The only part we play today is our simply, I guess you could say, joining in on the parade. That's it. Anyone can come along. No prerequisites, no forms to fill out. Positional sanctification says you are done, you are complete, and you're finished. You are pure, you are perfect, and you are without sin. Because of positional sanctification, we now can boldly approach the throne of God, and it is, to us anyway, a free gift. Now, when it comes to practical sanctification, well, that's a whole other story. One can't help but feel like maybe there was some sort of clerical error in heaven. Because we know we're not sinless and we're not perfect. We're, in fact, not even close. I mean, there is nothing about us to deserve that backstage pass, let alone the after-show party. One hardly wants to breathe for fear of messing up this Mo we got going, but gang, it's not Mo. It's grace. And it's no secret. It was the master plan of the Father to redeem fallen man, and it was also, well, epic. But practical sanctification, that which gains us nothing as far as points, is, however, reflective of the clarity of our understanding and the clarity of our love response. What that says to us and to the world around us, as well as to the Master himself, is we get it. We understand the magnitude of what played out on the cross for our redemption. Now, practical sanctification also has in it the progressive discipleship maturity that comes through our engagement with all things Jesus. We learn, we experience, we grow, we succeed, we fall down, we are encouraged, and at times we are corrected, and through it all we grow up. We live out our redemption, we walk the transforming of our living, and it's the drawing near of verse 22. It's the hold fast of verse 23. It's the actual practical living out of the indwelling control of the Holy Spirit. It's the doing what he has asked of Luke 6:46. It's the loving him with all my heart, soul, and mind of Matthew 22:37. And it's all part of the spiritual being transformed. Being transformed, that which is continual in every passionate and thankful redeemed individual. One of the great issues in all of this is the seemingly blind spot we all endure in our acknowledging of our true state. And we spoke on Sunday concerning verse 1, chapter 12 of Hebrews, where we read, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses." Now, I think few of us are willing to walk in that kind of transparency. Few of us are willing to allow others to speak into our lives on that level. We often keep others at arm's length and show only the happy, shiny people of Sunday morning church. But it is the individual that is willing to truly see and be seen. He or she that will speak honestly and be spoken to with honesty, that understands the profound value of being surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Even now in 2025, even in the churches that each one of us this evening call our community and our family. Most of us, frankly, are okay with this issue until someone hits a nerve. Well, then all bets are off. When we need some hand and we're not getting any. Our horizontal relationships and reactions are inevitably reflective of our vertical unity and our practical sanctification. And there's no way around it. It says whether we're still drinking the milk or eating spiritual steak. God will in an instant make you right. God in an instant will confirm your name in the book of life. Yet that is not the end. In fact, that's just the beginning. Derek Thomas once wrote this, quote, "The Christian life is a road trip, a journey of the most exhilarating kind. It has a starting point and a terminus. It is a metaphor of movement. Christians do not stay in one place too long, for they are set for another location. Early Christians were referred to as the followers of the way, a reflection that they seemed determined to follow a different path." In closing today, I leave with you 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 18 to 21, and I'm going to give it to you out of the Message Bible. It says this, "Your life is a journey you must travel with a deep consciousness of God. It costs God plenty to get you out of that dead-end, empty-headed life you grew up in. He paid with Christ's sacred blood, you know. He died like an unblemished sacrificial lamb. And this was no afterthought. Even though it was only lately, at the end of the ages, that has become public knowledge, God always knew he was going to do this for you. It's because of this sacrifice to Messiah, whom God then raised from the dead and glorified, that you trust God, that you know you have a future in God."